This is FCB Radio, where real talk lives. Visit us online at fcbradio.com.
Todd Allen Radio, turn your speakers up, let's go. Da-da-da-da-da. Todd Allen Radio, sit back, enjoy the show. Hey.
Hello, folks, and welcome. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. I'm your host, Professor Econ Todd Allen. In a studio, one of the studios, Khalid DeMar. Khalid, how are you, sir?
I'm well, and I am so happy that I will be available, at least for a short time, to sort of irritate as many people as I can in the short
Ashley Herzog, how you doing?
I'm good. I had a good day getting outside with my daughter.
Good, good. And Kingpin Morrow, Darvio, Kingpin Morrow, how you doing, sir?
What's going on, good sir?
Yeah, appreciate everybody being on. Appreciate everyone listening. We're going to get right into the show. And I want to start out with a Rona update.
We should get like a jingle or something. Khalid, write us something.
Oh, I definitely will.
So the numbers kind of still aren't matching. What are your thoughts, Ashley?
Sorry, I missed that first question.
The number still kind of sort of ain't matching. You know, we're here, we're locked down in place, and there have been other situations that have taken out that have taken place in the past without lockdown orders like this. What do you think in that regard?
Well, it's true. The numbers are not holding up because they are throwing out too many. And I wish they wouldn't do this. I don't know why they feel like they have to. The experts, or so-called experts, maybe I should say, keep throwing out projections and speculation. And of course, they really don't know because it depends on these rapidly changing factors. As I said last week, you know, first they said 2 million people are going to die. You know, and 70% of the American population could end up getting this virus. That's what they told us first. Now it's down to about 60,000. And they keep shifting the dates of when they think it's safe to reopen. We're always 2 weeks away from the peak of the coronavirus. That's what Ann Coulter said in her column this week. We're always 2 weeks away. So yeah. I wish these number games would stop, because the truth is we don't know. People are demanding to know things that nobody can answer.
Yeah. Khalid, you said in one of your Facebook posts, you said that even though that we have more information than we've ever had before, but we also have more misinformation than we've ever had before. Why don't you expand on that a little bit more?
Well, yeah, my post was, although the irony is that although this is the information age, never before have more people had more inaccurate information. And that is true. The inaccurate information people have, is based on too many agendas, too many people disseminate information with agendas. Also, too much information that comes from conspiracy theorists, and too much information that it comes from prognosticators. And if you ever notice, prognosticators, and I don't care if it's sports or you know, media, politics, they are almost always wrong. Think about it. I sound as cynical as I do because I listen to these people all the time. And I can tell you in so many instances where prognosticators are almost always wrong. They tell us every year who a certain team is going to draft. And they're almost always wrong, at least with the Browns. They'll tell you what you know, if you look at the weather, they build up sometimes the weather is going to be so bad, it's going to be so horrible, and then a lot of times it doesn't pan out. They projected millions of people were going to die from this. They're wrong. They told us who was going to win the last presidential election. They were wrong. They're just wrong all the time. And the inaccurate information people have is based on their agenda. And they read this nonsense, they spew it, and they turn out to be wrong. They were talking about martial law. And I had to tell people, look, get a grip on yourself. This is silly. Well, guess what? They were wrong. it's pathetic. And you have people who read crap. They don't disseminate, or they can't, they can't determine what's true and what's not true because they don't have enough base information or knowledge to determine what's true and what's not true.
I want, so, Darvio, jump in. And what are your thoughts about what Khalid just said?
I think there's a lot of truth to it, particularly on when we talk. I want to jump a little bit back to what Ashley was talking about. And I do agree that we're paying too much attention to models because just like, again, even Dr. Fauci said, a model is only as good as the data that you put into it, right? So a model, like we get so caught up in what the model says and is the model right, is the model wrong, when the thing that we need to be paying the most attention to is the data. And a lot of these prognosticators and things that Khalid is talking about, they're not operating with data. You know what I mean? They're operating with estimates and in some cases, guesstimates. So I think we really have to understand. But then again, we live in a society where Ashley made a very good point when she said people are asking questions and we don't have the answers to them. We just don't. We just don't. And it's very hard for the human psyche to accept the answer of I don't know. It's very hard for people to say, I don't know, right? Yeah. That's why a lot of times when people are asked a question that they don't know, they BS through it. Because it's hard for someone to say they don't know, and it's hard for someone to accept the fact that they don't know. This is a novel virus. We've never dealt with this particular virus before. There's a lot of stuff that we don't know. We don't know how many people are infected. We don't know how many people have been affected and healed from it. We're not even sure if you have been infected and healed from it, if you can get it again. Like, so there's so many different things that we don't know, but we live in this microwave popcorn society where everybody wants answers right now. And right. If we're going based off of data, you know, data doesn't work right now. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's a tough situation because people are asking questions that we just don't have the answers to.
I think you make a very good point. Each one of you made a very good point. And to Khalid's point, when he talked about the prognosticators, it's amazing to me how they want to talk about the number of people who've contracted the virus, and then they want to talk about the number of deaths, but they don't. They conspicuously leave out the number of people who have recovered from it. You don't hear those things, mm-hmm. right? And you don't even hear those as a percentage of the population. And mm-hmm. what has happened, in my view, is that you have had those purveyors of information, to use a term that Khalid was talking about, is that they have an agenda. And their agenda, whether it's Fox or whether it's CNN or MSNBC or whatever it is, their agenda is to get listeners. And so they will use whatever fantastic topic that they can use to keep people riveted to be able to watch and to listen to the information that they're giving. But my question is, are they necessarily giving hope without giving an agenda? And I think that's where what we need as a people. We need to know that there's hope out there, right? As opposed to, what these horrific numbers are. And then I also want to bring up a point. When we talk about the science, when we talk about following what the scientists say, well, the head of the WHO is a doctor, but do you know that he actually is a PhD? He's not a medical doctor. Did you know that?
I did not know.
Yeah, he's a medical doctor. He has a master's in immunology. But he's a medical doctor. No, he's not a medical doctor, but he's a PhD, right? In a doctor of philosophy in community
explain
health.
Explain the significance of
okay.
that.
Okay, if you want to get a PhD, you just got to write a paper.
Right. You don't have to work with patients or anything like that.
You don't have to work with patients or any of that stuff. So they call you doctor, right? What's the difference between God and a doctor? Well, God didn't think he's a doctor. But aside from that, what's the difference between an MD doctor and a PhD doctor? Well, an MD doctor actually has to practice medicine. The head of the WHO does not practice medicine, right?
He's an academic.
He's an academic.
The class of people that I despise the most in this world. But go ahead, Tom.
Present company excluded. Right. But herein lies the problem. We have a group of people, right? We have politicians on one side who, I mean, I don't care what anybody says. I think that the Democratic Party kind of sort of wanted something to happen where the economy was in shambles so that they might have a shot.
But then they
chose Biden. Okay. So, you know, they not only shot themselves in the foot, they shot themselves in the head with this whole piece. Okay. The other thing is that they want to talk about following the science. Well, you've got academicians who are pushing this thing. You've got people like our here in Ohio, we have the head of our medical. Well, we do actually have the head of our CDC or the head of our medical profession is a doctor.
But she's why is she doctor. Walking around? She's a real doctor.
She's a real doctor. But other places, I mean, you don't have to be a real doctor. So you're talking.
That's
about
a very interesting point. I never thought about that. That's a very interesting.
You know why? You know why? Because it's a bureaucratic position.
Exactly.
And the other thing I want to know is why is Amy Acton, who's the head of our of Ohio's health department or whatever she does, why is she on TV in a white lab coat? She's not seeing patients. I'm sorry. I mean, I like her. I'm sure that
well,
she.
I like know, her. I like her too. We also run the sorry, run her PSA. So shout out to
she's
to
a
Dr.
bit of
Acton.
She's but, a bit of. Grandstander, I think.
Well, I'm going to get a white lab coat and then say, you know, I don't, you know, I play a doctor and I've also stayed at Holiday Inn Express.
I have nothing to do with this conversation. Go to break, Todd.
Okay. Folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
Yo, what's poppin'? It is your friendly neighborhood Simba, Aaron Malik, here to remind you guys to go stream my new single, Tempo, on all streaming platforms. Yes, all of them. YouTube, SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, all that. I greatly appreciate it. Love you guys.
We rock, we roll, we rock to the tempo.
The dance floor where we come alive. Let loose through your limbs, how you feel inside. Mama, take my hand, show me the best you can.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Let's do this segment now. Let's do Really with Khalid Namar.
Really?
Okay. You heard me blast academics like I love to do. I actually need a cigarette each time I do it. Because I do believe a large percentage of them are really, really not well. I don't know if you heard this story. Lead NIH coronavirus researcher suggested pandemic could be genocide, said doctors would let blacks die. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I did. I think. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is a woman named Kismika Corbett.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. She is described by the National Institutes of Health as a, quote, lead member of the U.S. government team racing to find a coronavirus vaccine, has engaged with online theories calling the pandemic a black genocide and condemned what she called a, quote, systematic oppression by white people to review. Systematic oppression by white people. A review of her social media posts by Tucker Carlson tonight reveals. Okay. Corbett has also reposted a tweet urging Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and Dr. Jerome Adams, the Surgeon General, to check their, quote, privilege. See, we've talked about this multiple times on this show over the last couple of years. These people are so infested and so obsessed with race and their left-wing dogma, it creeps into every aspect of life, including academia. We've done stories where it's crept into astronomy and science. Now it's into medicine. This is a sick woman. She should be rebuked, and she should be removed from her position for such a moronic, ignorant comment. What basis do you have to suggest that this is some conspiracy to kill black people other than your warped brain? She will not be rebuked. She will not be removed from her position. I'd be shocked if she was. This is the kind of garbage that people like her are allowed to get away with. She talks about privilege. She's privileged to be a black female in this position, knowing that they will not fire her because instantly they'll be victims or shall I say accused of racism. That's the irony of it. This woman is sick.
Ashley, your response.
Yeah, obviously anyone who believes that it goes beyond just being having your mind warped by politics, which obviously is part of the problem. I mean, anyone who could see, like, tell that to the people in Italy, in Spain, and, you know, all the people that died in China. Like, how does this have anything to do with American racial politics? Yes, it seems to be, I guess, I don't have the actual numbers in front of me. They said that blacks are being hit harder in the U.S. in the cities. They're more likely not only to get it, but to end up hospitalized. But that's more a function of being lower income and working jobs where they're more likely to come into contact with people who have it. Like fields like home health care have a higher percentage of black people working in them. Mm-hmm. So, but that is not a conspiracy. That's just shows, you know, that there's still racial disparities and inequality in this country. Not that the virus itself is some kind of conspiracy against black people.
Let me jump in real quick. There's a lot of behavior attached to this as well. You've seen people, I've seen people with my own eyes still having parties in the hood, still getting together on the porch, you know, still getting together in these communities. They had a shooting out in Bakersfield, California, where a bunch of people had a party. They had it here in Willoughby. They had it in my mom's neighborhood, where people are out on the drinking, hanging out. And they were in Chicago at the park playing basketball, about 100 people.
No.
And one guy's got a mask on. There's lots of other things that contribute to this.
Well, that's not the only reason that black people are getting this at another rate. But I'm not going to argue with you right now.
I didn't say the only reason, Darvio. I just added that is a part of it. It's not all about just people's income. It's people's behavior. Because what about those morons that went to the
store? Well, we can't ignore that. Well, those were predominantly white, though. We saw those pictures.
Come on, bro.
So, but again, I'm not going to argue with you. Not today.
Yeah, there's all those white kids on the beach in Florida. I mean, come on.
Right.
I didn't see any black people there.
Well, right. But I want to make a larger point. I don't want to get caught up in that because Khalid and I argue for 20 minutes. So I don't like when people start to throw around the word genocide. Like,
I don't either.
I just don't like that. I mean, when, like, we know what genocide is, what actual real genocide is. And I feel like when you throw it around in this manner, you trivialize real genocide. So we can have a discussion. We can have a debate about the racial disparities and all that kind of stuff. We can have that. That's a legitimate discussion. That's a legitimate debate to have.
Yeah.
Even Khalid and I going back and forth, it's a legitimate conversation to have. But to call it genocide, I think
to call
is
the
a
virus
little...
itself as if this was manufactured in a lab, like, okay,
I think that's not even worth it.
It shouldn't be part of even the public discourse. It should be totally disregarded. We know where it came from. It came from China, and it came from either a wet market, or it came from a lab where they were doing research.
Where it carelessly leaked out. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, let me just say this is
an example of you know, we have some examples of politicians playing scientists. This is a scientist playing a politician, and I think that she gets a pass because she's a black woman and she's talking about being woke as a black person. When asked specifically, right, a question, she'll plead the fifth. Well, you know, this is playing mental games and mental volleyball, in essence, that this becomes, it may be her personal view, and she can think what she wants from a personal level. But when you make these things public and you're speaking from your platform as a leader in that regard, I think that becomes woefully dangerous.
Let me add this real quick, because this is important. She also accused her fellow physicians of basically choosing to let people die. She said this in her tweet, that
wow.
they would not give black people, or she suggested they wouldn't give black people ventilators if it came down to it. They would leave them to die. So wow. she's accusing her fellow physicians of being basically not caring about black people and letting them die. Haven't we been celebrating our healthcare workers and frontline first responders and doctors and nurses as being heroes?
But well, and I thought we went through all of this.
They're a bunch of racist murderers.
And I thought we went through all of this so that we wouldn't have to have that discussion in the first place. Like, I thought part of the reason of everything being shut down is so that we would have enough equipment, that we would have enough ventilators, which we do.
We
that,
do.
That wouldn't even be part of the conversation. So
they
nobody has been
denied a ventilator in this country.
Right.
So far. They don't think it's going to happen either.
And it's also a classic example of how blacks here in America, we always want to feel as though no matter what happens that, you know, we're not getting our fair shake of whatever it is that everybody else is getting.
Exactly. You know,
and that becomes problematic. I mean, I understand people want to be woke, the so-called woke. I mean, I understand that. But my question is, okay, what are we supposed to do with this information, miss? What if it were true? Okay, what are you suggesting that we do? And if you don't have a solution to whatever it is, whatever stink bomb you're throwing in the room and then not showing your hand, then shut up.
Now, you know what, Todd? I want to address that real quick. Like, I mean, most people who listen to this show know that I argue with you and Khalid quite a bit.
yes, you do.
You two are often wrong. But a point that you make that I think is very impactful is talking about solutions. And I think we should hone in on that, because if this were true, what is the solution? And it doesn't sound like, and Khalid, you can tell me because I didn't see it, it doesn't sound like she put any solutions on the table.
No, so, she just ranted.
Yeah. Right, right.
She's paranoid. Anyone who believes that is got...
And when Todd makes that point, I think that's probably the most poignant point on any conversation, particularly any conversation involving race. Because if you're calling out a problem or something that you perceive to be a problem, but you're not putting a solution on the table, you're just ranting. And I absolutely 100% agree with Todd's point on that.
Yeah, I'm just sick. This stuff has no place in this particular crisis at this time, where you have people of all races, stripes, backgrounds, pulling together to try to save people. And this dumb A puts this out there in her position. If anybody
give
else,
the position again, Khalid.
She's a member of the National Institutes of Health.
Okay. Oh, wow.
She's a lead researcher.
Yes, she is. Yeah. She's a researcher. And she puts out this trash of a comment. Anybody else would be fired. They'd be removed tomorrow.
Well, here's the question, and Ashley, I want you to address this. If she's accusing other doctors of violating their Hippocratic Oath, couldn't that be slander in a sense?
Oh, it is slander. I mean, legally, it's probably not. She's not naming anyone specific. But, I mean, she clearly has no respect for her fellow doctors and healthcare workers.
And so what she's basically saying is that anybody, if you're black, don't trust a white doctor. Pretty much.
Is that
what she's saying?
And she suggested if they wouldn't give you a ventilator because, you know, they'd rather give them to somebody who's not black. That's basically what she's saying.
Right.
Sicko.
Yeah, she should be fired for not only for slandering people, but for spreading such dangerous misinformation, I think.
Call her Dr. Sicko.
Dr. Sicko.
Are you in the nickname game now? You picked that up from El Presidente?
Yes, I am.
Folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
I'm Kira Davis, host of the Just Listen to Yourself podcast. And that's the podcast where I ask you to take your talking points on your favorite hot button issues of the day and draw them out to their logical conclusion. And that's available right here on the FCB Radio Network.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. Darvio, Ashley, I've found out one of the reasons why Michigan will never ever beat Ohio State again in football. The governor of that Dominion up north that we call the state of Michigan is quite the wordsmith, I should say, in terms of her viewpoint in what should be considered a health issue and what should not be. For example, she basically has stated, and I was looking for the direct quote here, but she basically has stated that she agrees that there should not be elective surgeries, but she does not believe that a woman's ability to have an abortion should be considered an elective surgery, because she believes that you're dealing with a woman's health directly when it comes to her either having or not having an abortion. And so that should be permitted. And she's very adamant about that. And Ashley, are you familiar with this story?
Yes, I'm familiar with a lot of what's going on in Michigan right now. And it's you know, I hate it when people say or call women crazy. I think it's a sexist trope. When it comes to this woman, Gretchen Whitmer, she's kookaloo. She needs to lay off the Botox, for one thing. Ooh. Second, her stay-at-home, she's really on a power trip. I mean, I can respect someone like Mike DeWine, who is across the board, and he was one of the first ones, and, you know, numbers have shown that what he did really did make a difference. Across the board said, okay, we're shutting down all non-essential businesses. Everyone stay home. A lot of people thought it was too strict, and we can argue about that, but at least he was consistent. Gretchen Whitmer, it's so politicized. This is when people start losing trust in government, when they see that, okay, we're going to ban all elective surgeries right now. So, you know, if you had a surgery scheduled and maybe you've been waiting for months and it's something that will really improve your health, like a hip replacement or something like that, you cannot have it right now. You have to reschedule, even if you have to wait another year. But you can have an abortion during this time. That is pure politics.
Here's her quote. He says, a woman's health care, her whole future, her ability to decide if and when she starts a family is not an election. It's a fundamental to her life.
That's her opinion.
Yes. She said it is life sustaining, and it's something that government should not be getting in the middle of.
Oh, she's getting in the middle of everything. She's banning people from traveling because my daughter has family in Michigan. She's banning people from traveling to and from their own homes. Like, if you are a Michigan resident who lives, like, in the Detroit area, but you have a second home or another residence in a different part of Michigan, you're not allowed to go there. You're not allowed to travel to your own house, even if you don't go anywhere else and even if you abide by all the rules. But, again, you can go have an abortion. And there's a lot of concern. It wasn't in Michigan, but I think it was an abortion clinic in Florida that they've had doctors and patients that have tested positive, or that have either tested positive for coronavirus and they have not notified the other patients, or they're not even testing people, but they're all in the waiting room together, not practicing any type of social distancing. They're all, you know, sitting in the waiting room waiting to get their abortion. They're not limiting the number of appointments. They actually said there's more abortion appointments now than ever. Like, in the, you know, over the course of the year, they're seeing the numbers go up, probably because they're scaring people so much with all this hysteria. Plus, there's reasonable fears with people losing their jobs and stuff.
I just think it's incredible here again, and we've talked about it before, that, you know, we always say, okay, what does the science say? What does the science say? What does the science say? Well, I think it's incredible. You know, we talk about the sciences, that when the president says every man and woman is going to get a check, right? Now we've come down to two sexes. Okay. So not only that, when she talks about life sustaining, but she's talking about life sustaining, but it's an abortive process. That is bizarre to me as well.
Yeah.
But you have this her comment again is not based on science, as you said very eloquently. It's based on her opinion.
Yeah, it is her opinion. And she can't call abortion life sustaining, but say something like a surgery that will allow someone to walk again and go to work is not life sustaining.
Right.
Because you're not going to lose your life unless in rare circumstances where you have some kind of, you know, condition caused by pregnancy, you're not going to lose your life by having a child.
Right.
It's not sustaining. It's not saving your life in most cases.
And the unfortunate part is that, again, the policies are being set by politicians, but and I think, Darvia, we've talked about this off air many times, that the solution or the cure is worse than the disease. It could become worse than the disease. What are your thoughts with all?
I think my issue, and again, I've been one that has defended the governors for doing, and in many cases, they do have the right to do this. I think a lot of people are unaware of how much power the executive has in emergency situations.
Right.
With that being said, what's been going on in Michigan is amazing to me. Like, you can't go buy seeds to grow your own food.
Yeah, but you can go to the store all you want. You can go
I don't understand.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
You can't. You're not allowed to go buy seeds to grow your own food.
You can't buy any gardening supplies, including seeds. But I drove past a Walmart today. I was in Toledo, and it was packed. It was more crowded than I've ever seen it because because
they're coming right across the border. But it just. Yeah. I don't So the problem that I have with this, and Ashley, I think you made the point. I think you were the one that made the point about it. About stuff like this hurting people's confidence.
It does.
And what you're saying, what the
government.
Yes, it undermines the trust in government. And that's the part that I think is dangerous, because I do believe a lot of these moves, particularly like you mentioned with Governor DeWine, I believe those moves were a good thing and they were the right thing to do. But then when you see overreach, like what you're seeing in Michigan, and make no doubt about it, that's an overreach. You know what I mean? That's clearly an overreach. It causes everyone to lose faith in all of it. And that, I think, is the most dangerous thing about it to me. It's not just what she's doing. It's the ripple effects and the aftershocks that what she's doing could be caused. I can't understand the logic of not allowing people to go buy seeds.
This is just power. This is unadulterated power.
To say that it's a threat to the public if people go and buy seeds while they're in Walmart anyway, as I saw today, it's packed.
Correct.
So you can't go into the gardening section and buy some seeds, but you can all pack into a waiting room of an abortion clinic.
It's Planned Parenthood.
It doesn't make any sense. And people know it doesn't make sense.
Well, and you know what was interesting is our Lieutenant Governor, John Husted, made a very interesting point. When he was asked several weeks ago by someone who sounded like he was, by a reporter who sounded like he was the teacher's pet in school, like he was a classroom snitch, he asked the lieutenant governor, why are liquor stores still open, right? And the lieutenant governor made a very smart and logical point that Governor Whitmer should have taken and used as well when it comes to the gardening section in Walmart. He said, most of our liquor stores in Ohio are in grocery stores. And we're keeping grocery stores open. And it makes no sense to tell people, yes, you can come here, but you can't shop in this area of the grocery store.
No, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And he was talking about the impracticality of being able to, he was like, how do you enforce that? And all of these sorts of things. And that was a completely logical answer that the governor of Michigan should have taken as well.
What this whole pandemic has done, in my view, has really exposed how intellectually vacuous many of our politicians are. And for those of you who don't understand what I mean by intellectually vacuous means is that they have an empty head. Okay. No brain exists there. Okay. What it does, it doesn't matter. I mean, as a leader, I can have certain viewpoints and opinions, but my personal viewpoints and opinions should not matter when it comes to what's in the best interest of the general population, if that's my job as a governor, right? Now, I'm sure that DeWine has certain views and certain outlooks on certain things, but what he did was he abdicated to the medical doctor that he has. I think that that was his last appointment, and I think that was a very brilliant appointment, that he actually has a medical doctor to lead the medical organization for the state. Not an academician, right?
And so I never would have thought about that until you brought that point up. That's very, that's a very interesting point.
Yeah. I mean, if, I mean, here's the thing, Darvio, and I don't know if you know this about me, but if I want to be a plumber, I don't talk to a dentist. Okay. All right. I just don't do that. But our politicians do all the time because it becomes it becomes politically expedient to get this person. Okay, well, you know, you slid me some money under the table for my campaign, so I'm going to give you this position, right? Right. And so what happens is that you have this circular firing squad, if you will, that all your friends and family get all these different appointments because they helped you to get elected. But then when the proverbial dung hits the fan, right, you find that the emperor has no clothes. And many of our quote unquote emperors, our politicians throughout this great country have no clothes.
Right.
Folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Todd Allen
Show. The Todd Allen Show. Show.
The iHeartRadio app is...
It's like it knows exactly what I like.
I don't have to think about it. It's just... Tap here, tap there.
I don't even need a whole bunch of apps. Everything right there.
It's free.
All free.
That's a good one.
Some of these apps are crazy.
You know what's funny? I didn't even know I liked podcasts, but then I saw them like all over the apps.
We listen in the car.
Whenever, wherever.
In my pocket, wherever I go.
I love it.
The iHeartRadio app. Radio, music, podcasts, all free. Free never sounded better. Download the iHeartRadio app today.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. I kind of want to go back to something that you said earlier in the show, Darvio, where you actually, you know, while sitting at my feet and learning about certain things that that during our Socratic sessions, that you actually said that one of the things that I one of the ways that I try to be very consistent is that that when receiving information, I get it, I hear it, I listen to it, I accept portions of it. But if a person does not offer solutions to be evaluated, I kind of discount it and kind of throw it out with the rest of the cleansing water. Let's talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about that. I think that what has happened during this short period of time, and I'll say short period of time because I mean we've probably been, even though it seems longer, we've been sequestered in place for about a month. Is that right?
A month. About a month. Yeah, give or take.
It's been about a month.
It's been about a month.
It's been 5 weeks since bars and restaurants all closed, and I think it's been 4 since everyone's been home from work.
Yeah.
Okay. And the amount of information that we get is a steady, slow drop. Like, I won't say, well, I'll say Far Eastern torture of a slow drop.
Right.
That is just, it's just unbearable.
Mm. Yeah. No, I think we were talking during a break about sensory overload and information overload. And there's been studies to show that a lot of us are going through that. So we have all of this information, but a lot of times we don't know what to do with it. And I think, and one of the reasons I'm going to point out here, one of the reasons why I think your comments about focusing on solutions is very important. Because even going back to the previous conversation that we had about the comment that scientist made, the reason why I consider it to be problematic from what she said, and I don't even like using that word because that's become a buzzword, but in this context, the reason why I think that what she said was problematic is because of the fact that African Americans have a, in many cases, justified fear already of the doctors and the hospitals and all of that. And when you are a people that's been through things like the Tuskegee experiment, mm-hmm. no one could blame you for looking, you know, with one eye closed and the other one squinted mm-hmm. at people in lab coats. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think the problem is when you throw something out there like that with no basis and no foundation and no solutions, it taps into our, in many cases, justifiable fear that we have. But when you tap into fear, fear can be paralyzing without solutions. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we want to know the problem, but then it's like, okay, well, this is how we can fix it. If you just give me the problem or what you consider to be the problem without telling me how we can fix it, all you're doing is making me paranoid.
Yeah. And Ashley, I know that you're the wordsmith of this group. I want to use the word doom. Because people who give, quote unquote, I just want to educate you. I just want to give you education. Okay, got you. But if you give me education, or if you give me information, but you don't give me a solution to where I feel doomed, that is a serious psychological problem that I then have, don't I?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you guys have made some good points about, well, Black people probably do have a reasonable fear that they won't be treated the same. And there's some research and evidence to back that up, like maternal mortality rates. Black women are much more likely to die in the course of pregnancy and childbirth. And some of it probably has to do with underlying conditions like diabetes, but a lot of it is not accounted for by health conditions. There's, you know, a lot of people think it's just that Black women aren't taken as seriously when they say they're in pain or when they're showing signs mm-hmm. of complications. People aren't listening to them. Mm-hmm. So that's like, okay, so let's look at that problem and then talk about how you can, you know, advocate for yourself, speak up for yourself, find a doctor that you're comfortable with ahead of time, what you can do. What we can all do too, what the medical establishment can do to fix that problem, but to just put out these things that play on old fears that still affect the African American community, like this virus is a conspiracy against us, that is so dangerous and so irresponsible.
Yeah, I think that's a very good word, irresponsible. Because again, if you have a group of people that have legitimate fears and legitimate reasons to be concerned with the, like you said, with the health disparities and all of that, and our history, to just throw something out there like that.
It's playing on fears that are valid and that exist and that reasons that, you know, that have a historical basis, but there is no basis for believing
for
this.
What she just, right. Absolutely.
Believing that coronavirus is a conspiracy against Black people. Like I said, tell that to the people in Italy. Tell that to the people Wuhan.
And then the problem with doing that, and when you're doing it with the people who have a justifiable fear of the system in which you're talking about, is that then it becomes even harder to correct that misinformation, right? Because you have people who are aware of the Tuskegee experiment, who are aware of the health disparities and the disparities of outcomes. Even when it's the same, when you have two people, one Black, one not Black, that have the same or similar conditions. People who are aware of that, it becomes much easier for people to believe misinformation like this, which is why it's so dangerous to just spit stuff out there like that. You know what I mean? Well, that's why it's so dangerous.
It is. And like, you know, it's the same as people kind of not only playing on people's fears, but also capitalizing on people, you know, on parents' fear of autism to promote hysteria about vaccines. That was total irresponsibility. It was all based on their personal agenda. Mm-hmm. There was no evidence for it. And they did the same thing. And, you know,
That's a very good point.
People keep a job.
I think that from an economics perspective, I think that as human beings, people operate for their self-interest. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what her self-interest is. I'm wondering what people who do this, who don't offer solution, what their self-interest is. Is it that they're trying to get some sort of fame out of this whole thing? Another point I want to bring out is this. Simply because something is correlated doesn't mean that it's causal. I'll give you an example. When polio was prevalent in the country, we saw more instances of polio in certain times. So when ice cream sales were up, polio was higher. When ice cream sales was down, polio the instances of polio was lower. So could we then say that ice cream causes polio? No. Correlation is not causation. Why were ice cream sales higher and instances of polio were higher? Because in the warmer months you have a third variable, which was the weather. Okay, so what happens when these scientific hacks or when these politicians or everything, where they go out there and they talk about correlation? That's not causality. Politicians do this ad nauseum. Okay.
Yeah, on nearly every issue.
On everything. And so what they want to do is they'll show causality, and then they'll say, a rational person could clearly see that this is correlated. Yes, it is correlated, but it doesn't mean that it's the cause of something. So what has happened, in my view, is that our education system, we have dumbed down the curriculum to such a point where people can no longer think critically, and that anybody that has an argument, an argument of fallacy will work. And correlation and causality is an argument of fallacy. If something is highly correlated, it does not mean it's a causality. And this is the reason why people cannot offer solutions.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You want?
No,
to...
I'm off my soapbox now.
I do agree with that to a point. But I'm going to use an example of that. There was a comment that I saw in an interview, I believe it was D.L. Hughley, and he made a point that I completely agree with. And he was talking about black neighborhoods, about inner city black neighborhoods and the quote unquote unsafeness of them. And he made a point of, he said, black neighborhoods are not unsafe because they're black, they're unsafe because they're poor. Name me a safe, poor neighborhood, right? And that's a very interesting point about causation. Again, causation versus correlation. You got a neighborhood with a bunch of black people in it. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be safe or unsafe. It's not the race of people itself that leads to the safe or unsafe. There's a whole bunch of different factors that go into that. Because if you go and look at some of the areas, like some of the counties in Maryland, for example, outside of Baltimore, where you have the highest income of African Americans, you know, they don't have the same crime disparities. If you look at another example here in the greater Cleveland area, the village of Woodmere, which is predominantly black, and it's one of the wealthiest areas in our county, they don't have the same crime issues. So I do believe that you make a point there.
At the same
about
time, you
correlation
have county
versus causation. Go ahead, Ashley.
Oh, at the same, I was going to say in West Virginia, you have counties where people are because of the drug epidemic, meth and opiates. You have people robbing pharmacies, shooting each other.
Mm-hmm.
Very high child abuse rates. They're crime ridden, and they're all white.
Yeah, which goes goes back to the point. But go ahead.
I would not simply say that because a person's poor that makes it a higher probability of them being criminal. I'm not buying that. I think that
criminal is. Well, we're like out of time, so if you want to extend this, we can extend this, but we got to go to break now, though.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
I'm Dr. Amy Acton, Director of the Ohio Department of Health. I know you have a lot of questions about coronavirus, so please call our hotline. The number is 833-4 Ask ODH.
Todd Allen Radio. Sit back, enjoy the show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Ashley, how can our listeners follow you?
You can find me on Facebook as myself, Ashley Herzog, and on Instagram as AshleyHerzog85.
Kingpin?
At Dita Kingpin on all social media platforms, DTheKingpin.
And you all can follow Khalid Damar on all social media, and also follow us at The Todd Allen Show on all social media. I want to go back to this whole, what I was talking about, wordsmithing earlier, about the word doomed.
Mm-hmm.
When a person loses all hope and they feel that there's no hope in terms of any positive outcome, and they feel that they have nothing to lose, that may foster certain types of behaviors and activities that may be different than what the general society would want them to have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're reaching that point where people are being put between a rock and a not so soft place, if you will. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Their livelihoods were taken from them by the government, by academics and politicians who said, well, who were using not the most accurate information when it came to putting this model together, shall we? And so they put policies in place that have taken the food out of people's mouths, basically, because they can't work. Now you're telling them that they have to shelter in place. You're telling them that they need to do all this stuff, and you're extending. But the people who are doing this are not the people who are missing paychecks. Nancy Pelosi she hasn't missed a check nor a meal during this whole process. And so for her to sit on her high horse and sit on Mount Olympus and be able to judge people who are doing certain types of behaviors that she would, quote unquote, doesn't think that they're rational. People are running out of hope at this particular point. They're running out of hope because our government has not offered any kind of solutions. Here's the thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. You give $1,200. Okay. I don't know what most people's rent checks or most people's mortgages are, or whatever it is, but you're telling them, okay, we're going to give you $1,200. Well, you're giving $1,200 back to the people because the only way that the government receives any income is through taxes in the first place. So you're giving people back the money that they gave you, Mr. Government.
Mm-hmm.
You're not giving anybody, you're not adding any water to the pool. You're basically giving them the water that from the pool that they gave you the bucket for.
Right.
So you're giving people $1,200. Okay. But they don't have a job. So this $1,200 is supposed to do what? Go pay their mortgage for 1 month. But then even if the bank says, hey, you know what, we're going to extend it so that when this is over with, then you'll just have to do what? Pay that month plus the month that you missed. The government isn't helping anybody with this whole process because the government hasn't offered any kind of solutions. They say, okay, well, we need to reopen up the economy. Okay, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Reopen the economy.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, as an economics teacher and the way that I teach my students as an Austrian economist, economics is a study of choices. Economics is simply the study of choices. It's not dollars and cents. It's choices. And so if people are saying, listen, I need to do, I need to go out and I need to put food on my table. But you're telling me I need to stay in place. I cannot work. I don't have money. I still have bills to pay. The electric company, they could shut this down at any point. Well, we need to be paid. So then you're going to have to get the go back to the government and ask them to intervene on your behalf. Because there's a lot of private businesses that provide services. So when you talk about giving people hope and what people ought to do, you're not offering any solutions. Okay, shelter in place. Okay, what am I supposed to do while I'm sheltering in place? Well, you can watch Netflix. What if I've seen every movie on Netflix? What can I do now? I can't go outside to exercise because in some places in this country, if you go outside to exercise, the police are not going to exercise social distancing and grab you, right? I'm sorry for this little rant, Ashley, but I've just reached a particular point at this time where I have to call bovine excrement where I see it, whether it's Democrat or Republican, right? And right. If it smells like bovine excrement, right? It looks like bovine excrement. Chances are that short of me stepping in it, I can recognize what BS looks like.
Right. So, hold on. You going to go ahead, Ashley?
Oh, I was just thinking. Someone posted on Facebook, and I saw it the other day that Congress. As long as this goes on and people at the state level, the state representative, if they want to have this shutdown, fine, let's have a shutdown. They shouldn't get paid either. They should be furloughed as far as their salary and their checks. They should not be getting money right now. Just so they can feel the pain that their constituents are feeling.
I agree with that. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah, and I also, I know a lot of liberals personally who have this attitude. Anyone who voices any kind of reservations about how long this is going on or how much longer it should persist, they have this attitude of how dare you suggest we all go back to work? Like, you're just trying to kill people. You're trying to kill the elderly. Well, I mean, and every one of them is a wealthy white liberal. They call them Lexus liberals for a reason. They can still afford their Lexus payments. A lot of them are retired. A lot of them are married to someone who works, but they don't have to because their husband's income is high enough. So it's great that you don't have to worry about money, but there's such an elitist mentality. Like, of course people are terrified of what's going to happen if they can't work for the next 3 months.
Right.
How can anyone not see that? Is my question.
So
these large corporations, right? I mean, they make billions and billions of dollars on a quarterly basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
How is it that after a month now we need to bail them out?
Well, so let me address, because this has been a lot of points made here. So I'll just say this. So for me, I agreed with the shelter in place. I still agree with the shelter in place. I'm a little concerned that we might be haphazardly reopening, but I will say this. I know for me as a small business owner, I have lost a lot of money during this period of time. We've taken a huge hit, and it's just based off of the nimbleness of this organization, being able to do what we're doing right now, doing it over Skype and all that kind of stuff, and some other moves that I've been able to make that we've been able to sustain the company.
Right.
Because we've taken a big hit too, right? So I understand that. I am all for the shelter in place, but I do think it's fair to at least look at the fact that this is not sustainable over the long term.
You have to define what long term is. This is not sustainable over the near short term.
Well, here's the thing. It's been about a month, right? This is not a long-term solution. Like, you can't do this month after month after month. It's just not going to work. There's going to be too much devastation. There's going to be too many businesses closing, too many people losing their jobs. It's just not sustainable. And then you have the situation like where you have the SBA plan giving loans to small businesses, which was a good plan. They've run out of money, and Congress hasn't replenished it yet.
Yeah, and it all went to chain restaurants like Bruce.
Because they're too busy. Because they're too busy bickering, and fighting with one another, instead of just focusing on, look, just pass this, get the money to small businesses, and everything else you want to do, just address that later. But they're not doing that. So I understand the concerns, because no one thinks, I don't think anyone thinks, except for maybe a handful of quacks, I don't think anyone thinks that you can do this for a long period of time, because you can't. You can't. This is just, it's not sustainable. But my concern is that we have to make sure that we know what we're doing. And Todd, you can attest to this. You know how fear can wreak havoc in an economy, right? Because the economy, like you said, economics is the study of choices. And when you inject fear into the economy, it can wreak havoc. So if people aren't comfortable, if people don't feel safe in the direction that we're going, you can open up everything tomorrow and they're still not going to go out and spend money. We're still going to be hurt. But go ahead.
There are two things. When you look at the stock market is not the economy. The economy is you and I go into the grocery store, right? That's the economy, right? That's the local economy. We're going to work. We're providing goods and services for other people. That's the local economy, right? The stock market is not the economy. The stock market is basically the value of companies going up and down and people basically speculating on what those companies are going to do in the future, okay? Right. Here's a dirty little secret. You can make money when the market is going down, and you can make money when the market is going up.
Yeah.
There are people who sold at the height of this thing and they're buying at the bottom of it. And a lot of those people that we're not talking about doing that are politicians. Politicians have profited from this whole thing.
That's true.
We'll be right back. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
I'm Kira Davis, host of the Just Listen to Yourself podcast. And that's the podcast where I ask you to take your talking points on your favorite hot button issues of the day and draw them out to their logical conclusion. And that's available right here on the FCB Radio Network.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. I want to apologize to Ashley and Darvio here. I've kind of been a little upset this show.
Really? I thought you was Khalid for a minute.
Ashley, you gonna let him talk to me like that? But yeah, I want to apologize to you all, because there's one thing that I'm allergic to, and I don't know if you knew this about me, Ashley, is that I'm allergic to stupidity. And I think that what has been happening all around us is people have been acting in a very unfamiliar way during this pandemic. They're looking awfully unfamiliar to me at this particular point, because you really see what a person is made of when the proverbial dung hits the fan. And there's a lot of things I'm seeing about a lot of people, a lot of politicians and otherwise, that, you know, I'm really, really not liking at this particular point. But I don't need to be angry on the show, so I apologize. So let's switch gears here a little bit. And since I am not only am I the elder statesman, the wise Aesop for Aesop Fables here on the show. I'm also booed up, as they say. Shout out to mi esposa. Hola, esposa. But I want to ask you guys this, because, you know, I know how difficult and challenging it is for me to be separated from my family. What is it like at this particular moment as single people during the Rona pandemic? What's it been like?
So I'm going to let Ashley take that first, because I want to have some time to think about my answer.
I'm good. For me, You know, I kind of took a break from dating this year to focus on work, my daughter, you know, finding myself at age 34. I'm not planning to let it go on much longer, but, you know.
Actually, I know people 70 who still looking for themselves.
Oh, yeah, I know. But for me, you know, it's been kind of, I've had guys that, you know, I'm not really interested in. Mostly guys that I don't even know, you know, they just find me on Facebook or on Instagram asking me on dates. And this is like the perfect excuse to just say no.
They ask you on dates?
Yeah, guys, I don't even know. I mean, I think they're legit people. You know, a lot of times they have mutual friends in common with me or something. They'll be, you know, sliding into my DMs like, you want to come over? You want to go out to dinner? And I'm not really into dating people that I don't meet organically. That's why I don't really use dating sites. I went on Tinder very briefly, and it kind of freaked me out. I did not see anyone that I was interested in going out with on there.
Yeah.
The conversation was very banal, and it was just very, it just felt too artificial. I like to meet people organically, the old-fashioned way, let the interest develop the way it should, instead of like forcing something on the internet. So I have like the perfect excuse to turn everyone down now.
Wow. So I mean, yeah, because I mean, to meet someone organically at this particular point, I mean, okay, so you go to the grocery store and you know, say, hey girl, you look pretty good underneath that mask. I mean, come on. I mean, how was that?
Well, you're not even supposed to be standing that close to each other to even be talking. So.
Right.
You can just keep it moving.
Right. Right. Darby,
but even that is preferable, I think, to meeting a stranger on the internet.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Darby.
So I will say this. I have some common cause with what Ashley was saying, like, because I kind of took a little bit of a break too, but my break was my last relationship, my last situation went so poorly that it made me reevaluate my decision making. So I kind of sat myself, I kind of had a seat for a minute, but it wasn't like a, you know, I'm not dating. It was just like, I'm chilling and whatever happens, happens. If something happens organically, then cool. But if not, I'm not really tripping about it. I will say that obviously in this situation and in this environment, it would be nice to have, you know, someone in house. Obviously, I got a couple of friends of mine, a couple of homeboys who are booed up, and it's a little different for them because of the fact that they're booed up. So I think it would help, absolutely. But I do think it does make the dating scene a little more difficult, because again, where are you going to take them? Where are you going out on a date? And you'd be afraid that he or she might have a Rona. You know what I'm saying? So so it's really, the dating scene is kind of on pause right now until all of this stuff is cleared out.
Yeah. So here's the question. This is the second part of that question. Once this is in our rearview mirror and you meet someone organically, and if in the course of the conversation, course of getting to know them and becoming closer and closer, then you find out that during this time period or this pandemic that they had the Rona, would that impact your way of thinking about them, or wouldn't it?
No. You mean if they had it or they have it currently?
If they had it, if they somehow was infected, they were infected at some point with the coronavirus, would that sway your thinking or outlook towards them?
No. It's not their fault. I mean, no, I wouldn't. I think that would be going a little overboard. It's not like herpes.
What are your thoughts, Darvia?
So I remember what Eddie Murphy said about herpes. You get herpes, it stay with you forever like luggage.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the same. I'm not gonna lie, I might give you a little side eye. I might give you a little bit of the side eye. But it's not
Yeah.
Right. How'd you get it? Right. So I might give you a little bit of the side eye, but I don't think it's a deal breaker. Now, if you have it at the moment, that might be somewhere I'd be like, I'll see you in a month.
Right.
We can exchange text messages and FaceTime lives and all that type of stuff. But I ain't coming over there.
That's the thing that I constantly have to kind of remind myself of as well, is that even if I'm taking the trash out, I have to remind myself this is not Chernobyl, right? That
right.
I'm not going to go outside and you know, combust into a ball of flames the moment man, that listen, the air...
Listen, let me tell you something. That first, when it first jumped off and they first shut down, the first time I went outside after that, man, I was scared as hell. I was scared as hell, man. I thought it was going to be in the air. And then I started panicking. I was like, oh, wait, my throat is scratchy. Oh, Lord, I got the wrong...
Yeah.
I was scared to death.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, one thing that I've learned, well, again, I appreciate what you guys have said, because I know that you know, being single is already difficult enough to try to find a quality person.
Yes, Lord, especially in 2020.
Especially in 2020, and this whole pandemic, worldwide pandemic, has impacted me in such a way. Again, that my wife is actually in Colombia. She's from Colombia. She's in Colombia now, and so being separated from her. I've had to take this time to kind of really hone in on newfound skills. And one of them will be, you know, language skill. Let me ask you this, Darvio, directly. Have you mm-hmm. used this time to kind of hone in on your, let us just say, cutting down the social distance skill when this pandemic is over? Your mouthpiece. Have you been working on your game when it comes to?
Come on, man. I had game as a fetus, so that's not that's not the problem.
I understand it, but it's a different environment now. That's what I'm basically saying.
So what? I mean, like, hey, baby, I got a mask for you or something. Like, I don't know how you address that.
There are some things I can teach you, but others I can't, Darvio. So I'm just asking the question.
You're a fool. So, like, well, I will say this. And I saw this. I forget it was a preacher that I saw say this when it was talking about using this time while we are grounded, so to speak, using this time to position yourself to be able to have bounce back above and beyond once all of this is over with. And that is one of the things that I've been doing. I've definitely been, we have a lot of very, very positive things going on at this company right now. And it's ironic and unfortunate that all of these things are going on while the world is shut down. So we can't really capitalize on it at the moment, but just kind of thinking and honing in on the craft and really positioning us to be able to be successful and to go to new heights moving forward. That's what I've been doing. That's what I've been taking this time to spend. And I think everybody should be taking this time to better themselves and to position themselves to move forward as best as they can.
Ashley, what about you?
Yeah, I think this is a good time for people to do some work on themselves, to think about where they want to be when this whole thing opens up again. That's what I've chosen to do. It's kind of a blessing in disguise because I just started a new job, my day job, not this show. But, you know, I've been able to focus on that and to really settle into the position without any distractions. So, in a way, that's the one good thing that's come out of this.
We only have a minute or about 2 minutes left, so I want to ask this question. I want each one of you to address this. I know that, again, having this pandemic has really caused people to really rethink a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
How has it impacted your rethinking relationships moving forward?
Oh, wow. Well, I think we all have to ask a question before we become serious with anyone. Is this someone you could see yourself being quarantined with?
Yeah. That's been the big question on the internet.
I think that's very important. And I think moving forward, we're always going to think about that. Like, if I get stuck, if something else happens, if COVID-20 or COVID-21 or something show up later and I'm stuck with you, am I okay? Or are we going to want to strangle each other by the end of it? That's what you,
right.
I do think that that's something that is, that part has definitely changed the dating scene.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you guys are working on yourselves, especially you, Darvio, because I wouldn't want somebody to strangle you if we get locked up again. Folks, we'll be right back. We're right back. We're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
Yo, 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 what's poppin', what's poppin'? It is your friendly neighborhood Simba, Aaron Malik, here to remind you guys to go stream my new single, Tempo, on all streaming platforms. Yes, all of them. YouTube, SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, all that. I greatly appreciate it. Love you guys.
We rock, we roll, we ride to the tempo.
The dance floor where we come alive. Let loose through your limbs, how you feel inside. Mama, take my hand, show me the best you can.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. Darvio, as we said, a lot of things have been happening. A lot of changes have been taking place during this pandemic, and it seems like we've been sequestered in place for longer than we have, and it has been quite challenging. But there are a couple of things that I have been introduced to that I'm quite pleased with. And as you know, I've always said that if I could hire four people to carry me around on an elevated platform, that I would do that. And I have found some services that do almost that same thing. I've never been a DoorDash guy before in the past.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
It's an amazing service that I can.
Yes,
actually,
it is.
You use DoorDash?
I have used it before.
Okay. And I've become sort of a DoorDash prude in a sense too, because there are some stores that when you order food that they almost hermetically seal your food.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And there's others that don't. And I kind of don't like the ones that don't. The ones that I find that don't seal your food a certain way I shan't use those again. But I've also found that there's a service that you can use that you actually buy groceries online and then people actually deliver it to your home.
Right.
The one that I use is called Instacart. And amazingly enough, it's domiciled out of California. I hate to admit that online, but I think that's a real real good service. But I really enjoy that, and you might want to be able to check that out, because I mean, you can order
Instacart, right?
Mm-hmm. You can actually download it on your cell phone. That I was able to order groceries from one of my local favorite shopping supermarkets. And for example, I had them get me some kale, some greens, 10 apples, blah, 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 blah. And then within 45 minutes to an hour, it was brought to my home and delivered to my front door. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing service. And I really enjoyed that. So I would highly recommend that you would do that, especially since, as you said, you had an episode where when you went outside, you thought that
man, I thought I was about to die. I was so like, listen, man, y'all don't know. The struggle is real for somebody who was already a germaphobe before all of this. Like, know I was a germaphobe prior to this.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
struggle,
I can only imagine now.
The struggle is real, man. But
so do you clean your apartment like it's a hospital now?
Pretty much. Pretty much. And my hands, I'm surprised I have any skin left in them because of all the all the soap and the hand sanitizer, and I take hand sanitizer with me, and I have another batch of hand sanitizer in the car just in case I leave my hand sanitizer at the house. Like, man, I'm not playing no games, man. But back to
Use lotion.
Yeah, that's true. But I use sanitizer more than I use the lotion, man.
Or
I use sanitizer constantly.
Wow.
Constantly. When I'm outside, man. Skin. Right. When I go out the car, I use it. When I come back in the car, I use it. When I'm in the store, I use it.
But you don't use gloves, right?
Sometimes I use gloves, but it doesn't really. I don't know if you talked about this on the show or not, but I agree with your logic. Like, it doesn't really make sense. You got gloves on and you're touching everything, and then you're touching the food that you're gonna put in your mouth, and you got these rubber gloves that got everything on them. You know what I mean? That's not very logical. That's not a good idea.
Yeah,
I'll trust my hands before I trust them gloves.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I got that from when I look at the restaurants right before this. You know, they people would have the plastic gloves on that are handling your food in the back, but then they got the towel and they're wiping the towel down, wiping the cabinet down, but you haven't changed your gloves.
I thought about that, man. I went to the drive-thru. I was real hungry, and I was like, well, let me, I hadn't had anything all day. I was like, well, let me just stop at the drive-thru. So I went to the drive-thru, and they had gloves on, and the same hands that they was using to give me my food and hand me my food was the same hands that they used with the same gloves to hand the little plastic cart that they want me to put my card in, the same hand that they used to take it back, the same hand that they use to punch the stuff in the keyboard on the cash register, the same hand they used to swipe my stuff, and then they gave it back and my food. And I sat there and I was like, this don't seem right to me. This don't feel right. This I don't think this is logical.
Yeah. See, you do listen. Okay.
No, I thought about that, man. I was like, like, wait a minute. You touching everything. You got the gloves on, and I appreciate that. But you touching everything that you come into contact with them same damn gloves.
Right.
And you ain't switched gloves. And I'm like, I don't know if that helps. So needless to say, I haven't been back to a drive-thru since.
Right. Yeah. Well, you use DoorDash, man. It's better than a drive-thru.
Well, you know what, man? And that's what I was about to say about DoorDash. So I actually haven't used DoorDash around this time because, you know, I'd stocked up on groceries. So I'm pretty much good in the house when it comes to food.
Are you cooking?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes. But I also get, you know, I also got some TV dinners and stuff, too, when I feel like being lazy. However, when I did use DoorDash was in the winter when my car went down. If you remember that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where I was Ubering and lifting back and forth to the studio. And when it was the period of time when my car went down and before I got my truck, I was at the house without really no reliable transportation unless I decided to spend the extra money to lift and Uber. Which didn't make sense if I'm going to catch an Uber. I got to catch an Uber to work. I got to catch an Uber back home from work. And then if I'm going to go get something to eat, I got to catch the Uber to the restaurant, pay the restaurant, and then catch the Uber back. That was just too much. So that was when I started using DoorDash.
Right.
And would have them deliver, you know, to the house. And it was awesome. It was awesome. It was a very good service. And the thing I appreciate the most about DoorDash, because at the time, when I had these issues with my car, I was still living in the hood. And they delivered to the hood.
Well, wow. They weren't Starbucks.
I could have got Starbucks if I wanted to. I don't know if Starbucks is on DoorDash or not, but if they're on one of them, because you know it's like three of them. So you could have got Starbucks delivered to the hood. So I was very appreciative of the fact that DoorDash delivered to the hood.
Right. Awesome. So again, when this is all over with, what's going to happen to these sports teams, man? I mean, I'm not just talking about the professional, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about...
Talk about the organization.
Just sports in general. High school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, middle school. Because, I mean, let's just be honest. You take athletics out of a lot of these schools.
Some of our kids. You talking about these colleges? They ain't got
no. Talking about high schools, middle schools
as well.
Because not every child that goes to school goes to school to learn.
Right.
That sometimes the only thing that motivates them to continue
is athletics. Yeah.
Is athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And with the social distancing, I mean, I don't know how you're gonna play a football game by maintaining 6 feet between you and the ball carrier.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you look on the one hand, you know, they're playing, they already have gloves and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if you put a mask under the helmet or whatever. I don't know. But then that hurts with the communication and stuff, too. So there's things you got to think about that. But I will say this. Actually, Cleveland Mayor Frank Jackson, who I just interviewed on the Outlaws radio show, by the way, get it wherever you get your podcast, just for the record. He mentioned on our show a very good point that I hadn't really thought about, because we always, like, when we talk, I'm talking about the pro teams. We always think about pro teams. We think about all the millionaires and billionaires and all that, sounding like Bernie, right? But he made a point. He was like, you know, he said the Indians, the Cavs, and the Browns are bringing nothing in right now, but they still have their expenses. And he said, I don't care how wealthy you are, you can't do that forever. And I thought about that. I said, damn, you know what? That's a very good point. Like, that's from a practical business matter. And sometimes we don't think about sports teams as a regular business because of the fact that they're dealing with so much more money. But they have a lot of employees. We're not talking about the athletes, but all of the people that work in the front office, all of the people who work concessions, all of the people who work, you know. And I think so many times we focus, oh, they're a billionaire. Yeah, but if you're a millionaire or a billionaire, you ain't trying to throw your money away.
Right. Well, I mean, the only way that the athletic teams, I mean, the athletes are the product of the business, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so the business is entertainment.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Sports is entertainment. I totally agree.
And so when you don't entertain, you know,
you don't make no money.
You don't make any money. But so this whole athletic thing, the sports thing, is not, again, like I said, it's, for me, it's not just the athletics as far as the pros are concerned, but the athletics of the high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, yeah. What is the Ohio State University going to do without a football team?
Well, here's the thing, man, and people were kind of talking about this. Maybe we're going to see for the next year teams playing in empty arenas and empty stadiums. Like, they might be playing without the fans.
Wow. Without the band, without the fans. I mean,
yeah, and everything. I mean,
so how do they train? How do they prepare? Because this would be the off season, you know, spring football. I mean,
they can't really go unless they got home gyms. And if you're talking about college players, you know, most of them don't have that because a lot of them don't have any money, which is a whole nother discussion for a whole nother day. But that becomes an issue as well. Like, how do they train? And not only that, but because of this coronavirus being something that we know very little about, you know, Dr. Fauci mentioned that there is a concern and there is starting to become consensus that this thing may show back up. Even if we get rid of it in the summer, if it goes away like the flu does, this thing may show back up in the fall and the winter, which is when they play football. So that is a concern.
Yeah. Folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Todd Allen
Show. The Todd Allen Show. Show. The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. And I don't get to do this very often, but when I do, I really enjoy doing this particular segment of the You Big Dummy.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period.
Stupid!
The reason that bad things happen to you is because you're a dumbass.
You big dummy!
Okay. Dario. Andrew Cuomo is Andrew Cuomo is the governor of the great state of New York City. Of New York.
Yes.
And his handling of this pandemic, some people say that he's been very presidential. Other people have said that he has not, but apparently, his relationship with the president sometimes has been strained. He does have a brother who's in the news media, who his brother and his brother's wife have contracted the coronavirus. So I would say that Governor Cuomo is under a lot of pressure.
Right. Like all governors.
Absolutely. And, you're able to see the real metal of leadership when these things kind of happen. But Governor Cuomo was on a national news media outlet, and he said something which was very interesting. And I'm going to quote it. This is from the National Review. Andrew Cuomo earlier this week celebrated things in New York going better than expected. He was insistent that God didn't make things better. Man's hard work did. This is what the governor said. He said, the number's down because we brought the number down. God did not do that. Faith did not do that. Destiny did not do that. A lot of pain and suffering did that. That's how it works. It's math. And if you don't continue to do that, you're going to see that number go back up. And that will be a tragedy if that number goes back up. So, this
is outrageous.
It's amazing from this standpoint. I mean, I know that there's there are many people out there who don't believe that that God is involved in the providence of man. That there are some people who don't believe that there is in the Almighty. There are some people who just simply don't believe. They just believe in science more so than anything. I think it's rather dangerous to mock God. And I think, my view...
Not a good idea.
Nah.
Not a good idea
at all. It's interesting because the president has spoken about prayer, right? The government has invoked God in many instances and calling for National Day of Prayer. And which is interesting is that Cuomo would make this kind of statement during one of the most holiest time periods of the world. During the Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that God will not be mocked. This, I think, is very dangerous to have these types of statements and to be thankful to the Almighty for these things being set in place. And I say this for this reason. Living here in the United States, that, you know, people talk about land of the free and home of the brave. I would think that there's not as many brave people as we would like to think, but a lot of people think that they are free to do whatever it is that they want to do, whenever it is that they want to do it. And when someone tells them that they cannot do it, there's going to be a problem. And for the most part, they have not liked the idea of shelter in place, but they've gone along with it for these past 4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I think that that is where we need to be thankful that God has imparted some wisdom in the masses to say, sit your behind at home.
Right.
And especially, as I said, during this time period, you know, for those of you who practice the faith as I do, this was called the Passover season, right? Where there were certain things that you would do in preparation for the Passover, that you would get all the leaven out of your home, and that you would prepare for Passover. This was the time period in the Bible where the children of Israel were getting ready to, where the final plague was coming into Egypt. And so there were things that they had to do to prepare. And so then many others celebrate this time as the death, burial, and the resurrection of Yeshua, the Messiah, as well. It just strikes me as very odd that someone would say that type of a statement during this period of time, that it wasn't God that lowered this, it was us.
I don't think the statement is odd. I think that the statement is dangerously arrogant. And I think that the statement shows, and many people have this, and he is a, from my understanding, he is a Christian. So a lot of, even some Christians have this. They have a fundamental misunderstanding of who God is and the nature of God and what God contributes to everyday human life. So it is through God that we have human ingenuity. It is through God that we have all of the things that human beings have developed. If it was not for us being able to have the functionality to do so, which we were given by God, none of these things were possible. And I think the dangerously arrogant part of it is the tendency that people have had, that human beings have had towards history, to look at the creation and praise the creation for the accomplishments instead of the creator, who either gave you the accomplishments directly or gave you divine inspiration for you to create those things that then led to those accomplishments.
Right.
So I think this is very dangerous. I think from as a Christian, I think this was a very stupid comment to make. And I think this is this deserves to be in the Big Dummy segment. I just think you playing with fire. That's a Russian roulette thing. And once again, I think it's a fundamental misunderstanding of who God is and what he does.
I think sometimes people tend to get into fights with the inability to win at all. And this is a fight that you know, you don't want to pick this fight with the one who created you, right? I think the sad part is the arrogance, as you said. I think that's the sad part, because we know that in many instances that God that things pass over because of humility, that before any type of honor, there's humility. And we know that before destruction, haughty is the heart of man before destruction. Arrogant is a man before destruction.
Yep.
And many nations have suffered because of the arrogance of leadership.
Pride goeth before the fall.
And if you look at where this epicenter is, it's in New York. This is the very state that this person is leading. Wouldn't it be wouldn't it be a great thing that if leadership would not be arrogant in terms of their handling these things, but if they would just humble themselves and say, hey, look, you know, Lord, Father, you know, you are the Father of all things. You're the Father of all creation, that you have the power to take this thing away.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if we just humble ourselves, right, and we humble ourselves before the Almighty God, and say, Lord, take this away from us, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with being humble, man.
You know? No, there isn't. It's not going to kill you to be humble. It's just, you know, I remember, and I'll close on this end. One of my former business partners used to always talk about, he had a phrase. He said, the ignorance of arrogance. And that was something that always kind of stuck with me. And the way that he explained it was, arrogance makes you ignorant. Because when you have arrogance, you become exposed to so many different blind spots that you are unaware that you have. And eventually, those blind spots come and kick you into you know what.
Right.
And you have no preparation to deal with them because your nose is up in the air. Right. So you're not even looking at the things that are going on around you. It's the ignorance of arrogance. That is why pride go before the fall. Because right. Your pride, your arrogance causes you to be ignorant. And it opens the door for bad outcomes.
I appreciate that. That was well said. And I know that usually I ask for last words, but I'm going to let you have ended the show on that particular note. But I just want to say this as a final word for thanks for listening to here for the Todd Allen Show. And I just hope and I pray to the Almighty that everyone listening to this show, that you're safe, that your family is safe, and that you remain healthy. And that when this thing is all over, that you regain everything that you've lost. And for those who've lost loved ones along the way, you know, our heart goes out to you. And we just pray for your family's strength, pray for your strength. And we just pray that one day this will all be over and we will be in a better position in the future than we are today. That's it for us, folks. Until next time, you're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The FCB Radio Network, first-class broadcasting worldwide.